You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 29th of July 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org and he might actually be doing a bit of sports analysis today. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Well, a little better than yesterday. I think maybe a piano is going to fall on my head at any moment. The minute we started talking, someone started mowing just outside my window. So someone has a target on me. But I have to say, back in grad school, I saw a book on the shelves called The Regulation of Chiropractic in the Balkans in the 1990s. And I remember looking at that book saying, there's probably nothing in the universe I care less about than that. Until the 2021 Olympics. But all of a sudden, I read about these stories, and believe it or not, I care a little bit about the 2021 Olympics. We're going to be talking about that today for some godforsaken reason, but it's a legitimate topic.
Well, it's been very bizarre, actually. I mean, particularly with the COVID regulations. I don't know if you've looked at them at all, but they're only allowed to speak to other Olympians for 1 minute and 30 seconds. If they speak for any longer than that, there is a danger that they might catch COVID. When they eat their meals, they're only allowed to eat the meal for 10 minutes. There's no sex allowed. There's no audience allowed. I mean, these sports stars are basically having to perform in empty stadiums. Three quarters of Japan voted not to allow the Olympics. They really did not want the Olympics to take place. They've built all these stadiums. They put all this money into it. And it's just a complete waste of money. And now we've got sports stars that are actually catching COVID. There are all these protests outside. I mean, it just seems a colossal waste of resources to me to have built those stadiums up there and then not fill them up with people and for the excuse for that to be this COVID. I mean, they could have just left it for another year. And that's before we even get into what's been happening with some of these sports stars. We want to particularly talk about Simone Biles today. But have you got any comments just on, you know, the COVID regulations and just the Olympics generally, Matt, that you want to begin with?
Well, I think, you know, you're talking about the U.S. women's soccer, for example. No one really shows up to that anyway. So to have empty stadiums, they could always use as an excuse and say, well, no one's here because they're not allowed to be. So that gives them a kind of a built-in excuse. So the COVID regulations, especially as far as the athletes are concerned, are absurd. These are some of the healthiest people on the planet. Even if they got COVID, no one would even know it. So the whole thing is based on myth and story, as we all know. But this whole thing is prefaced on the idea that viewership for the Olympics is down, depending on who you read, between 30 and 50% compared with 4 years ago. So no one's watching this thing. No one cares. So they're going to invent a whole lot of human interest stories, whether it be the Biles case or any of these others. The U.S. women's soccer is another one. Invent these human interest stories to build some kind of buzz about this. And they've succeeded in doing that. And the only reason that this has come into existence is because no one's watching this stuff.
Well, there's been a particular social justice component to this as well. I think it was the Swedish netball team or the Swedish handball team, and they wore shorts instead of wearing the regulation bikinis. And they were disqualified for that. I mean, they were breaking the rules, basically. The rules are you have to wear certain clothes, and they decided that they were going to break the rules and they were not going to wear the clothes. And the rules are also that you're not supposed to bring politics into it, and yet we've seen people kneeling down for the national anthem, which is basically spitting in the face of patriotism and saying we're refusing to stand for the national anthem. So we've had all this social justice warrior stuff that's been going on as well. And now we have this this Simone Biles, the American gymnast, and she is a good gymnast. I mean, she's won gold medals previously at the Olympics, but she started off yesterday and she basically failed to do what she attempted to do. And then she just walked off and basically let her country down. She said that she was resigning from the Olympics because she wanted to concentrate on herself. I mean, could anything be more selfish than saying you're just going to give up because it's not fun anymore and you want to think about yourself? There was no thought whatsoever for her team, who then had to carry on without her and lost, basically. They lost spectacularly. And instead of pointing out how selfish this is and that this is setting a really bad example and you're supposed to be a team player, everybody's making out that she's a great hero. She says it's to do with mental health problems. It's to do with selfishness. And I'm wondering whether, I mean, she's got two brownie points here, hasn't she? She's black, so she's got the diversity points. And then she's also talking about mental health, so she's got the mental health points as well. I mean, both of those things give you a victim status. But I never would have thought that they would have gone so over the top in the way that they are. I mean, making this woman out to be a hero when she's not, she's a failure, and she's let her country down. But I know you've got some other thoughts on this, Matt, and you were trying to mention something about Adderall last night as well that I wasn't able to pick up on. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, there's a few stories out there that she's taking Adderall, I can only assume for ADD, and it is illegal in Japan. Now, that wouldn't make any difference if it's an American with a prescription. That wouldn't matter anyway. She's not a Japanese citizen. So I think that's been thrown out the window. So they list all these excuses, but the notion of overwhelming pressure is ridiculous. This woman has been competing at very, very high levels for a long time. And the minute she claims that she can't do it anymore, she comes right back and is cheering on her teammates from the side like everything is perfectly okay. I mean, she calls herself the greatest of all time. They're trying to blame this on something to do with Larry Nassar from Michigan State. She actually had him as a team doctor at one point. So they're going on and on about this. There's certainly nothing wrong with her. Whatever problem she had, she's always had. The pressure is normal. There's nothing particularly special about this, especially in empty arenas. And I think that, you know, she had a tough time and she's not going to be the greatest for once. And so the team ended up getting a silver medal, which she also received. So she got essentially a participation silver medal for all this. And now this is going to be the standard. Now, I know, like Brett Favre, he was with the Packers. He lost his father before the playoffs. The next day he was playing. Lou Costello from Abbott and Costello, his son drowned in the pool. And that very night he was on the radio. The show has to go on. That was a standard. Now, I do think this is a matter of female privilege, where she can do this. If a man were to do this, I think he would be condemned. He'd be called a wimp. He'd be called all these things, and she gets away with it for all the reasons that you mentioned. And it's an awful precedent. It's terrible. And again, like I said before, the U.S. soccer team is just as bad. So they're making excuses for these people with empty stadiums and no viewership. They're trying to create an issue that doesn't exist to get some kind of interest in it. And I think they've succeeded.
Well, you mentioned the female privilege there, and that also ties in with the fact that she says that she's retiring because it's not fun anymore. And of course, this is what women are taught, aren't they? They're taught, well, if your marriage isn't fun anymore, then just get a divorce. Everything should always be fun. Everything should always be great. That's the narrative that's sold in Hollywood, that women are supposed to lead these fantastic lives where they're entertained all the time, they have everything that they want, and the world revolves around them. And if they don't get that, then there must be something wrong. It means you must leave your marriage. It means you must walk out on the Olympics. I mean, to give that as an excuse, it really didn't seem like fun anymore, and I wanted to concentrate on myself. I mean, it's a dreadful standard to set, basically. I mean, she's held up as a hero by a lot of youngsters, and they are seeing the way that she's behaving, and they're going to follow that. You mentioned the American soccer team as well, and I guess Megan Rapinoe has to be the absolute worst for this. I mean, she's been demanding equal pay with the male soccer teams, and yet she cannot actually defeat a male soccer team. A male soccer team of 15 years old. I mean, the American soccer team played this Dallas schoolboy team, and the Dallas schoolboys absolutely thrashed her. And this shows that when you have a meritocracy, she's not up to the standard. The girls' soccer team is not up to the standard of the boys' soccer team. So male soccer stars get paid more. I mean, it is just obvious. She's demanding that she should get paid exactly the same simply because she's a female. She's not demanding it because she's good at football. She's demanding it because she's a female. And then you've got her performance, or that her team's performance, rather, at the Olympics, where they make this terribly ostentatious display of getting down on their knees and refusing to stand for the national anthem. That just seems so pretentious to me. Every time I see that, I think, how can they do that? Have they no sense of self-reflection? Have they no idea how pathetic that looks? You know, it's just dreadful to see. And then she lost. I think they lost 5-3, something like that. She lost to the Swedish team. But of course, the Swedish team also got down on their knees for their new overlords. What do you make of the American soccer team's performance, Matt?
Well, if you would have told me a month ago that I'd be talking to you about U.S. women's soccer, I would say that you're on drugs. But because they politicize everything, that means everything is amenable to legal to political regulation. Now, they actually were shut out 3-0 by Sweden. But the issue is that this team sued U.S. soccer on an equal pay basis. Even a documentary was made condemning U.S. soccer, immediately refusing to talk about the nature of the contracts that they signed, besides the fact that no one really cares about women's soccer, and that it would have been an empty stadium anyway. It's like, you know, the WNBA, which loses $20 million a year, and they keep financing it, even though they know they're going to lose money with it, the women's professional basketball. But the story is that the women's team signed a contract where they get paid, they get $100,000 a year plus benefits, whether or not they play. So COVID hits, another lockdown, they don't play, they get paid the same. Now, the men didn't do this. The men are it's based on performance. It's based on, you know, if they don't show up or if something gets canceled, they don't get paid at all. And that's why there's two different unions negotiating two different contracts. So when they went to court, the judge threw it out on the grounds that this was a legitimate contract decision. Again, besides the fact that they generate no income, women's soccer generates zero income. But trying to make these people, this is the only way that they're going to be celebrities. No one's going to care about this unless they politicize it. All the conservatives, you know, the Ben Shapiro types, all they do is talk about how unpatriotic they are, refusing to get into these serious issues and the ridiculous equal pay stuff. They say, they knelt for the national anthem. That's why they lost. And that's how bad they are. They're refusing to get involved with the actual issues. At least Shapiro said, well, no one cares about women's soccer. In no way. In fact, the U.S. Federation says we're going to go bankrupt if this lawsuit goes through. But it was thrown out. They're appealing right now. But losing to Sweden so badly is really has harmed their case. There was such a buildup to this that these are invincible feminists here, and they were blown out. And they're one of the media's excuses. I think it was the Washington Post, said it was because the stadium was empty and they're used to roaring crowds. That was a big thing. And they said the music was too loud because the crowds weren't there, so the music was comparatively louder. I mean, this is what they're coming up. They never had roaring crowds in their history. And this is what they have to come up with to excuse it. And it does remind me of one of my favorite Olympic events in 2004. In 2004, the U.S. men's basketball team, now you have some big NBA stars on that team, were defeated by Lithuania 94-90. that were defeated by Argentina, 89 to 81. Even the Puerto Rican team, not sure why Puerto Rico has a separate team from the U.S., beat them 92 to 73. They barely beat Greece, 77 to 71. These are major NBA stars, and this was covered up at the time because I guess they're not these invincible athletes. And it's the same kind of thing. This huge buildup with a team that mostly relies on public relations rather than, I mean, Allen Iverson, Tim Duncan, these are the people on that team. So these people get defeated, and they'll come up with any possible excuse. But at least basketball makes a lot of money. People actually watch basketball, men's basketball. So this whole thing is caught up in ideology and fantasy theorizing, and they're trying to actually bankrupt the U.S. soccer for this equal pay thing based on, as you said, minimal performance and trendy ideology. And now they're screaming, you know, sexism for the fact that no one watches this stuff. This is an absolute disaster. This is what happens when you politicize everything.
It's like they want to play at being men. It's like they're mocking men. They're, you know, their soccer team is no good. They can't defeat a team made up of schoolboys, and yet they demand to be paid the same. They demand to have the same respect as if they were a winning male soccer team. I mean, it's really insulting to men to do that, I think, to claim that they are just the same, just as good, and in actual fact, they don't. It's like they're just mocking men. Well, why don't they do something that women are good at doing that men cannot do as well as women? There are things that women can do that they can do better than men. Why do they insist on making a mockery of men by claiming that they can be just as good as men and then demanding that they get paid for it? It's like they just think they should just get paid whatever, regardless of their performance, just paid for being women. And not all women are like that, but this female American soccer team, they are absolutely insufferable. I mean, thankfully, we don't get to see them that much over here in Britain, but I have seen this Megan Rapinoe with her pink hair and her lesbian demands, basically. She's an outspoken lesbian feminist. And all of this follows on top of what we've recently had over here in Britain with the UEFA Cup, I believe it's called. I don't really follow the soccer myself, but we really couldn't help but follow it, basically. It was just 24/7. We were hearing about how the England team is going to win the cup and the England team is going to bring football home again. And the government put out adverts saying that the reason why the England team was doing so well is because it was so diverse, because 8/11 of the football team came from different countries. They had a different ethnic heritage, basically. They weren't white, and it was 8/11 of them. And when it came to the final match, the white guy had scored a goal, and then it came down to penalties at the end, and Gareth Southgate brought on three black players who hadn't taken part in the match. And of course, the three black players with all the expectation on them to win, they failed. They fluffed it. They didn't score the goal. And, you know, you can feel sympathy for them, the fact that they had all that pressure upon them, but they still failed. They lost. And basically, we were told that diversity was going to win us this competition. And in actual fact, diversity lost us this competition. But the strange thing was, afterwards, when you would then expect to see lots of criticism of these football players, and when this sort of thing has happened before, there's been awful things that have been sent to the football players. David Beckham once had an effigy of himself being hanged that was sent to him when he fluffed up the penalties. And yet what we saw with these three diverse footballers is that we saw this imagery with them with crowns on their heads. And they were made out to be great heroes for losing us the tournament, basically. We were told that there was racist graffiti that was put up, and it wasn't racist. It just had swearing on it. We had 3 days' worth of news telling us that we were all racist because of this horrible graffiti. We were told that there were social media accounts that were being racist as well, and then we discovered that 70% of those social media accounts actually came from outside of Britain. And they just hero worship these people for failure. I mean, I don't even know the name of the white guy that actually scored us the goal, but I do know that it was Marcus Rashford that didn't score us a goal, and that we are supposed to be worshipping and talking about what a great guy he is and how wonderful he is, even though he actually lost us the game. It seems that failure is now being rewarded. If you exceed in something, if you excel at something, then you're going to be accused of being a racist. They're going to try and hold you back, particularly if you excel at things at school and you're white. They're not going to give any interest in you because that's your white privilege that is showing there. And then the people that don't succeed, they sink all the resources into them, particularly at schools. The group with the lowest average IQ get the most resources put into them. And of course, then it all turns into a failure when they get to university because they cannot actually keep up with the standards. And this is now making its way into sport, where it's obvious that these people are failing and they shouldn't be praised for failure. Why should anybody be praised for failure? It means you haven't won. It means you've lost. You know, you've lost it all for your country. Okay, people shouldn't be mean to them, but there should be criticism, and it should be legitimate to criticize them. And what they say now is, you can't criticize these people because they're diverse. If you do, you'll be accused of racism, and that's exactly what happened with this graffiti. This graffiti had swear words in it, but it was not racist graffiti, and yet it was accused of being racist graffiti. So they've made it that you cannot even criticize anybody that is diverse now. Even if you're not being racist, you cannot criticize them because you'll be accused of being racist. Did you hear about this, Matt? I mean, this was quite a big news story with this cup that the English team lost. Have you got any thoughts on that?
Well, the regime is actually pushing soccer. Now, I've never met a soccer fan in my life. I don't know any in the U.S., that is. The fanaticism that you have in Britain and Latin America, you know, but I never thought I'd see the day where you had football hooligans in Europe terrified of saying the wrong thing. Talk about power. But American football had a similar issue where now about a decade ago, thanks to Don Wassel's American Nationalist Union, the study called Cast Football showed that the dominance of white players in college, and this is, you know, wide receivers, you know, traditionally black positions, these guys were actively discriminated against, and blacks were hired for the NFL, for the pros. You had dominant white teams that were completely ignored. You had cases where white teams from Idaho were trouncing black teams from Georgia. And usually the NFL is almost an all-black thing. But you go to the college level, and you see that whites dominate almost every position. Even in high school, whites dominate almost every position. Usually in smaller colleges, but their numbers are just as good as anybody else. But when it comes to the NFL, they are filtered out. In other words, only black guys can be wide receiver. That's changed a little bit, but that's only very recent. So the notion of black athletic superiority is a myth that the regime likes to push. Same thing goes for, you know, whether it be a Tiger Woods, who is not black, or this gymnast. But building these images is what it's all about. Remember, as far as the soccer team goes, all of these people have agents. And the soccer team itself has agents. They have heavy PR going on. So everything that happens here is from a PR firm. The color of the hair, the tattoos, the agenda, the kneeling, all this stuff. This isn't really their decision. This is being done by huge PR firms that these people have contracted. And even with all this, U.S. soccer talked about how heroic these girls are, despite the fact they almost got bankrupted in this suit. But wherever you go, you have this massive discrimination. And the NFL was the worst case where dominant white players were being discriminated, were not being drafted to make sure that you had an overwhelmingly black NFL, but the numbers don't in the college and high school don't back that up. So that's definitely a huge part of this, making blacks this super race of physically superior people has been an agenda ever since the civil rights movement here. And so what's being promoted, what's being pushed, really has nothing to do. That's not to take away from some of these people, not by any means. I'm not stupid. I'm not going to say that. But you have dominant white athletes that don't get any attention. But even dominant black athletes, like in gymnastics, you have to invent a story for anyone to even notice them. And that's what's happening here.
Well, they do like to make a big fuss of their black athletes. We had one over here, a runner. I think his name was Mo Farah. And they made a huge thing out of this black guy. I think he's a Somalian. and he can run fast. And, you know, there are differences. There are racial differences between whites and blacks. Blacks have much faster twitch muscles, which means that for a short burst of energy, they can run faster. So they're very good at doing the 100-meter sprint. Whenever you see these 100-meter sprint races, you'll never see a white face amongst them. Conversely, with whites, we have a larger chest cavity and we have slightly less dense bones, so we float in the water better. And you will very, very rarely see a black swimmer that's actually taking part in the swimming. I mean, these are ways that you can spot the racial differences when you're actually looking at the Olympics. And I have to feel very sorry for the English or the British Olympics swimmer. I mean, he's a white guy, but he has a black wife. And he thinks that his child is going to be an excellent Olympic swimmer like he is. And it just can't happen, because that child is going to have less of a chest cavity. It's not going to be able to get as much oxygen into his lungs. He's going to have a denser bone weight, so he's not going to float in the water as well. So he's already starting out against a handicap, basically, as if he was starting out with a weight on his back. If it was a white guy with his weight on his back that's actually competing. So I do feel sorry for him. But, you know, these things people should know. People should know the differences between biology, between the different races, because they really do make differences. I mean, almost as much differences as the transgenders do, which is another subject which we haven't actually gone into with the Olympics. But of course, there is also this weightlifter from New Zealand who was born male, who has decided to live as a female for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and since then has been breaking all the weightlifting records. So New Zealand has actually entered a biological male as a female, because the Olympics testosterone rating is that if you test with your testosterone at under 10.0, you can then compete as a woman. Now, the NHS will not even give you testosterone replacement therapy as a man unless you test below 8.0. So the NHS will tell you that you're a man with a normal testosterone level at 8.0 or 9.0, but the Olympic panel will tell you that with that testosterone level, you can compete as a woman. So, I mean, that just shows you that there is still that edge there with that testosterone. And it also shows you how out of order the NHS are in not actually providing testosterone replacement therapy for men whose testosterone is so low that they can actually compete as a woman. Have you heard about this one, Matt? Did you see this New Zealand weightlifter that was born a male?
Yes, I have come across that. I've come across a lot of other examples. And much of the time, if you look at pictures of them without any filters on, you'll see it's just a man in a wig. Now, media images are heavily filtered. They tend to look more feminine. But unfiltered pictures, you'll see they just have a wig on. So this is either the regime promoting this, or these guys figuring out a way to dominate. And if they couldn't dominate male, they'll dominate a female sport. So what conservatives are doing, instead of talking about the mental illness that goes into being transgender, which is the very definition of insanity and delusion, they don't talk about that anymore. They'll talk about how unfair it is that these transgenders are competing in women's sports and how that's such a blow to equality. So conservatives usually do this. They'll figure out some angle that's less offensive. They'll even appeal to transgender people who are all severely mentally ill and say, well, yeah, this is a matter of equality here. We're just talking about, you know, being fair. They won't even say that men are stronger or whatever it is. And of course, you know, one of the big fighters again is North Korea. North Korea's one big dominant sport, believe it or not, is female powerlifting. Now, I don't know how they came to that decision. So this is going to be their big thing, but it is. And they're the ones, of course, no one pays attention, are saying this is outrageous. The North Korean women are actual females. They're not drugged up, which is, by the way, a whole separate thing with the Russian case. Like, that has anything to do with it. And they were dominant really until now. And because they're putting men in there with a wig on who finally get to dominate something, it's incredible. But that's the only, and no one cares about female weights or wrestling or anything like that until this came around. Now everyone's talking about it, which is a boon to some of these people. I never met someone who even knew there was such a thing as female powerlifting before until this issue came around and gave them a huge ratings boost. Most people don't even know that exists. Now everyone's talking about it because of this issue. So the whole thing just smacks of artificiality.
Well, I'd like to see how the North Koreans do. You brought up the Russian doping issue. Do you want to just finish off by telling us your thoughts on that?
Well, the whole thing is ridiculous. We're running out of time. I can't really get into it. The doping scandal is largely artificial and invented, especially since so many of these people are doing the same kind of things. Why the hell would they be doping, knowing full well they're going to be tested the next day? The whole thing is absurd. This is a way to get rid of Russia, who's always a dominant team, but they're able to sneak back in, calling it the ROC, the Olympic Committee. They can't use the flag. They've used some of the colors, and they've done very, very well. Took me a while. What is ROC? And they don't even use the Russian flag. So this is a purely political matter, trying to keep Russia out. I kept laughing at myself. The Olympics in the 60s, when Mao Zedong was slaughtering 30 million people, were they kept out of the Olympics? Pretty sure they weren't. But this is just an excuse to punish Russia some more. It really comes down to the sanctions and everything else. The doping is just a silly excuse that has no basis in reality. It just doesn't matter. Even if it does, it doesn't make any difference. So that's what that's all about. It's just a way to punish them, because now the Olympics is purely politicized, and like everything else in the world, totally dominated by the left.
Well, the sooner it's over and we get back to normal BBC breakfast TV time, the better. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.